The past.
A boy in a spaceship.
The present.
A garden and its gnomes.
The future.
And fate and its designers.
You are listening to COL Movies.
Compliance.
Greetings, program.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. This is reel number 40, and I would like to introduce my my
compliance
co-hosts, Ray and Steve. How are you guys doing?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not compliant, so I don't know what you're trying to say. You ain't my daddy.
Hey, I'm not the one who came up with the adjective for this week. And just because of that adjective, and just because of the movie I watched last night, I now have this.
Compliance.
And I can hit it anytime I want to. So
I'm like, what kind of movie were you watching?
Compliance.
We'll be talking about that in a bit. So now I need you to be
compliant.
And let's move on into the news. Starting up with Iron Man 3 has a director.
Yeah, I guess it's been rumored that this guy was going to be the director. His name is Shane Black. I guess he has directed exactly one other movie.
Oh, nice.
Which was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang back in 2005. Back in 2005. Mm-hmm. Which also starred Robert Downey Jr. So.
Oh, okay.
This should be interesting. He's primarily a writer. He's written stuff like Lethal Weapon and The Long Kiss Goodnight and The Last Boy Scout.
So a couple things we might have heard of.
Yeah. It sounds like he's also going to be writing the script for Iron Man 3. So.
Yeah, sounds like a good thing, in my humble opinion. But, you know, I kind of hope that they don't put out Iron Man 3 anytime soon. Like, they should do it after the Avengers movie. So we kind of let everybody else trickle in through their own movies and then have Avengers and then go back to Iron Man. Almost would like to see kind of a almost comic-ish type cycle where one year they have a movie for all these. So each separate one has their movie and then they have the Avengers movie, you know. And then the next year, they all have another movie. But you first get through that series of other heroes and movies before you go back to the other movie. So that way you don't have like Iron Man 3, Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, et cetera. So.
I think they have it all planned out in a certain order. So it might come somewhere similar to what you're saying.
Okay, so I sure hope so. Because I like that. I've just actually, speaking of superheroes, because of my new wonderful iPad, I've actually been, Comixology has eaten my soul. So that's I'm going to be putting a lot into, especially considering I want to read the Green Lantern saga, The Blackest Night, and I want to get every single issue of the crossover. So there's like 60-70 issues, so there's going to be a lot.
Wow.
On that, so I'm gonna get deep into it. Whenever you have one of these big storylines, I get obsessed with it, and I want to get every single issue, because I've seen things like in the Batman crossover No Man's Land. They've got this like 5 volumes of trade paperbacks for most of them, but not all of them. There's like Catwoman issues that aren't in there. There was Nightwing issues that weren't in there. There were Robin issues that weren't in there, and I wanted them all. And I can get a little obsessive when it comes to storyline, so I want to do that with this. And the nice thing is, all those will be are available on Comixology. I'm just gonna kind of spread them out so I don't spend a couple hundred dollars all at once.
And, Just so you know, according to IMDb, The Avengers is coming out in 2012, and Iron Man 3 is released in 2013.
Perfect. Sounds good to me. Moving on. Speaking of heroes, although not comic book heroes, Olivia Wilde is rumored to be the next Lara Croft.
Yes, everybody knows Olivia Wilde from things like House and Tron Legacy and the upcoming Cowboys and Aliens. So it'd be interesting to see if she can throw on the hot pants and the guns and
can the breasts. Can she be pretty and badass?
And, you know what? I think she can physically pull off the part. I'm trying to picture her with the proper English accent. That's going to be the clincher right there.
Yeah, and the problem with the fact that Angelina Jolie is Lara Croft. That's all I'm saying. That's just me.
Yeah, Angelina's getting a little long in the tooth, though, for Lara Croft.
So. True. So I suppose we need to do it. And who knows? Maybe she'll be absolutely fantastic, and that'll be happy, joy.
My question is, do we really need another Lara Croft movie?
That's my question.
Yes. Yes. I think Lara Croft needs to replace Indiana Jones.
Okay.
Because, I mean, Harrison Ford's becoming too old, and who wants to see, quote-unquote, Indiana Jones movies starring LaBeouf? Just saying. Do I need
to see obviously more? Nobody, because nobody wanted to see the last movie.
Oh, God.
Exactly.
So bad. CGI Harrison. Oh.
Anyways. Moving on, this next couple of news articles I actually got from the Morning Stream, the new morning show on the Frog Pants Network, which I absolutely adore, by the way.
Frog Pants Network.
Yes, with Film Sack and... well, now he's doing a morning show Monday through Thursdays, and... he had a couple things in his celebrity poop section. One of them said, rumor Dark Knight Rises star Marion Cotillard praises Christopher Nolan. Basically, the idea of this, or the reason why I put this in here, is because it's looking like she's going to be cast into The Dark Knight Rises. And most likely, I think they're rumored as Selina Kyle / Catwoman.
Marion Cotillard? Really?
Marion Cotillard, and I mean, we already got additional. We got Tom Hardy and Joseph Gordon-Levitt are looking to be in there. I can't remember who they were thinking each of those. Oh, Tom Hardy was going to play Bane, and
right.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt was going to play. Actually, no one really has figured out what he was going to play. So. Still up in arms on that, but the big reason for this specific article, which is on MTV.com, is mainly because of those rumors of who is going to be starring in The Dark Knight Rises. Apparently, the last Nolan Batman flick.
Rumor has it. Break the back of the bat.
I have faith in you, Mr. Nolan.
Break the back of the bat.
No, not yet. I really don't. I'm sorry, but I don't want to go out of a rant here. But honestly, really have to give Bruce enough time to really get out there, be this super guy, be knocking down all these different his everyone from his rogues gallery, and then eventually, like 5, 6, 7, maybe even Batman 10, then you break the bat. And in the meantime, somehow you have to sneak Dick Grayson in there as Robin.
I'll say this now, but you know, I'm sure I'll probably want to see the movie when the first trailers come out. But I'm kind of over Batman to a degree.
You know, I just got on my iPad. I know I'm a little obsessed. Actually, the Dark Knight app for $9.99, and it includes the actual movie of The Dark Knight.
Oh.
So I can actually watch it right there on my iPad. I can stream it or I could download it. I downloaded it, so I've got it there. Anyways.
Interesting.
So there's a little tidbit for you, for people, is if you have an iPad, go to the iTunes store, get the Dark Knight app. There's an Inception app, too. Warner Brothers.
You are so funny tonight. I feel like we're doing product placement shots throughout the entire show for iPad.
I like my iPad.
And the different, and then these different apps, and then for what was it you were just at the websites, the different Flixer, websites. I'm like, we're not making any money, honey. Move it on.
Let's wrap up the news with another one I got from Celebrity Poop from the morning stream. The new Superman movie gets an amazing title and the first look at Andrew Garfield in full costume. Newsflash. So when they say amazing title, they're basically saying that the new Spider-Man movie is called The Amazing Spider-Man. And we actually have some shots of the new Spidey costume, which is looking fantastic. And really cool fact, they're not using organic web shooters. They're using his web shooter gadgets that the actual Spider-Man uses in the regular comics instead of the Spider-Man 2099 or Spider-Man or Ultimate Spider-Man, which has organic. So that's going to be a little bit of a change. And I do have to say, I like the costume. It's looking nice. It's more textured, and instead of just the webbing being the texture, it's like the whole thing is. And
it looks it looks like Kevlar, like thin layer of Kevlar or something. I mean, just the way that it looks.
Yeah, totally. So
the funny thing about this story is I actually almost put similar story about Mr. Superman, Henry Cavill. Supposedly one of the things of his audition for the role was he had to actually put on the Christopher Reeve Superman outfit and walk out in front of the director. And it was funny reading the article because he was kind of like, you know what? Some actors walk out and you just laugh. Because they look funny in it. And when he walked out, we immediately knew that he was Superman because he could make that costume, as cheesy as it is, work. So that was a big choice and the reason why they cast him, because he fit the costume.
Cool.
Sounds good. All right. So time to get a little bit more
compliant
and move into the past. I don't mind. But you better promise me I'll be back in time.
Compliant.
Gotta get back in time. In the past, we go back to 1986, where we check out Flight of the Navigator. You are the Navigator.
Compliant.
Anyways. I'm going to have way too much fun with that, I suppose.
Somebody needs to put that into an easy button for you.
What do you think that is? So starring Joey Kramer, Paul Mall. When I say that. Veronica Cartwright, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Howard Hessman. All I gotta say about this, I like the first piece of trivia. The first Disney movie to be released with profanities, the word shit is said twice.
Yeah. Was a big deal.
By Jeff, nonetheless. Great name.
This movie, this movie was one of my just like childhood favorites. I had a turn your ears off. I had a pirated copy of this movie back in the day. I used to watch this over and over and over and over and over again on VHS. Because, it came out in 1986, and the kid in the movie is 12, and in 1986, I was 12. So
it was perfect.
Yeah. I so wanted to be him.
I want to be in that spaceship flying around with the things and the moving the pads and rocking out to the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
And having this little cute little thing with the little Muppet thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the funny thing for me was, I was just slightly older, and my brother was probably too young for this. Mm-hmm. So this is one that I think in my time I kind of missed. When I watched it all the way through, I clearly remember the visuals of it and stuff like that, because I probably saw it on like a remember when they used to do the Disney Night at the Movies on Sunday nights or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. or Saturday nights or whatever, they'd show all the older Disney movies, like the, you know, like just all the different older movies, and right. I think I probably caught parts of it on there or something like that, because I definitely knew the characters and the ship and all that stuff, but I hadn't seen it from the beginning, so I didn't know what the whole plot line was.
You know, it's almost like one of those things where you keep remembering these certain things, especially anything involving the spaceship.
Yeah,
and you don't remember, things like the plot line and what happened beforehand. How did he get involved with the spaceship thing and all that. And it was just really refreshing to finally see this again after I have no idea how many years since I last saw this. And despite how old it is, it's over 20 years old, 25, almost 26 years. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I felt like it really held up.
Oh yeah, the movie, other than obviously, you know, the stuff in 1986.
Right. That's what I was gonna say. I was like, the 80s dated a lot.
Yeah.
But sister, dude, that's rad. And I loved his inside out shirt, which is like was such a trend back then.
I noticed that too. I'm like, oh my god.
And his fake mullet, which everybody had in high school.
A fuck.
I had a real mullet.
But it was that just little, I had almost a rat. If you just had a rat tail, it would have been perfect.
I had one of those.
So yeah, supposedly this movie is up for a remake, which I didn't really know about until I started doing some research. And in fact, I almost want to say that it's supposed to come out soon, although I haven't really heard anything about it. And rumors are that it's going to still do the whole time travel thing, go back to the 70s, but instead of it being obviously 1986 that he comes back to, it would be 2010 or somewhere.
Wow.
Yeah. So it'd be a little more, at least that part would be a little more updated. Again, not sure if this movie needs a remake, because like you said, it held up sort of well. So it's not like there's like cheesy effects that could be redone
or a sequel or something. I think that there was actually, looking at IMDb, there was an article at Scorecard Review that is included as one of the top seven movies that deserve sequels. Top seven movies, 20 plus years, that deserve sequels.
Really?
When this was on there, huh?
I thought it kind of tied itself up pretty well.
Yeah.
Sequel would have just been him growing up and the ship coming back, probably. You know what I mean? Like, which would make
sense. Here's what the writer had to say. He said, the reason was another one of those movies that was no doubt better to me than it was to the rest of the world. Still, things have changed even more since 1986. With all the progress made with special effects, a sequel could be even more daring. More time travel or a trip to another world of Max and a new navigator would be fun to explore. There are tons of options for this one, but I'm not holding my breath for a sequel. Still, a man can dream. So I kind of agree. I would like to kind of see something going on, like what was Phelan like? Yeah.
Well,
some additional questions that could be answered, or at least, or what would be kind of cool would be to see what happened during the trip, during that 8 years. Like they went to Phelan, what happened in Phelan?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a couple things to that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I need a sequel or a remake.
Yeah, I think this one, it closes itself up pretty well. You know, I mean, it wasn't so. I'm comfortable with where it ends.
No more,
you know?
No more raping my childhood.
Yeah.
Damn you.
Speaking of raping your childhood, did y'all find the Pee Wee Herman or Pall Mall at least a little bit annoying?
No.
No.
Not at all.
Oh, God.
Maybe you just don't like Pee Wee that much?
You know what? I didn't mind him so much as, you know, as the ship so badly, but it was the, you know, that his laugh that just, it just tore through me after he did it so much.
Well, you know that, well, the funny thing about it is that for kids,
yeah,
that's really their first exposure to Pee-wee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because he hadn't done the actual TV show.
Yeah, yet. Right.
So nobody really knew who Pee-wee was at that time. You know, he had done his the play, you know, but nothing that kids had ever gotten in to see. So, you know, okay. That. So I don't know. I guess I have a little soft spot in my heart for Pee-wee. So
yeah, okay. I've never actually got into Pee-wee at all. I always thought he was kind of dumb myself, but just there's just these unique little things throughout that, you know, the things that you remember about Pee-wee, those little notes like haha, how are you, you know, that the way you spoke and everything, that just kind of reminded me of the childhood, even though I never really watched the show or was interested in the show or anything. I mean, in the end, Paul Reubens in general is actually a pretty good actor. So, yeah, I mean, look at what's it called? Well, Batman Returns as Penguin's father.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, that's what a lot of geeks remember him as, the bad guy from Buffy.
And there was, what was it called? The Minutemen? No. Mystery Men. Mm-hmm. He played the fart guy.
Yeah, pull my
finger. Anyways. Right.
So I really like him. In general, I think he's a good
guess actor. I do. Maybe it's just because I'm watching it with my eyes today and I don't remember that from then. But, you know, like, it seems, I didn't see this character as the Pee Wee Herman character. You know, I mean, the Pee Wee Herman character does the, you know, stuff. I can't barely do it. But
well, and also,
you know, it just seemed weird for a computer, for a, you know, robotic spaceship to be like, all the time, you know.
Well,
like,
what happened was he kind of, when he scanned the kid's brain, he kind of picked up on, you know, the kid's young, you know, goofy attitude and everything. So, which kind of reprogrammed him. So,
if he'd been watching Pee-wee's Playhouse, it would have made a whole lot more sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pee-wee's Playhouse wasn't out.
I know. I'm just right.
But I mean, Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
If you ever get a chance to go, if you find it on YouTube or somewhere, if you can find the video of the original Pee-wee Herman show, which was back from like 1981, the very adult Pee-wee,
right?
Check it out because it is funny, and then that kind of makes Pee-wee's Playhouse a little bit funnier to see that same character sort of.
Right.
Children's
this
show.
This is back when he was like in the Groundlings and stuff, right?
Yeah. Back when Phil Hartman and all them were
in
the Groundlings. So, yeah, September 11th, 1981 was when that first started. So, yeah.
You have to check that out.
And the other question, though, is why do you think this one maybe didn't get the same notoriety and stuff of other, you know, space movies? Like, I think of Last Starfighter, I think of Space Camp, I think of, you know, just some of those others that were kind of a little more kid friendly space movies, but I don't remember. And I'm thinking of the other one too, where the kids build the little spaceship that goes into orbit. Oh my gosh.
Explorers.
Yes. Explorers. Thank you. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so mad I can't remember the name of it right now. But I'm thinking of those movies before I would even think of Flight of the Navigator. So why do you think that is? Is that just a me thing, or do you guys
agree or disagree? I'm trying to look real quick here at all the movies that came out in 1986.
Yeah.
To see if it was just sort of lost in the in the shuffle or something. I mean, we've got stuff like Maximum Overdrive, The Money Pit. I'm not seeing anything too kiddy.
Yeah, in general, people like this movie, too. Looking at the Rotten Tomatoes ratings, it's 78% fresh. 69% of the audience liked it. I wonder if it
came out around the same time as Transformers the movie and just got kind of...
No. Transformers the movie came out in 1985.
Oh, okay.
I know, because I'm a Transformers geek. Nerd.
Okay. Well, according to this list, it was 86, but I'm not going to argue with it. I don't even remember seeing anything about this movie promotion-wise. So.
That's what I mean. You know, that's what I mean about it. I mean, it's a Disney flick, so most people are going
to... But let's make a modification to that, though. It wasn't originally a Disney flick. It was actually a independent production for Producer Sales Organization, and they collapsed, and... Disney kind of picked it up, you know. It was just kind of a. It was probably more of an afterthought of a movie than anything.
Right. Yeah. But Disney's a marketing machine, though. You know, it's like if there's one thing they know how to do, it's how to freaking flood that media with promotion material. The first time I stumbled across this movie was it was already in the rental stores in the video. You know, so that was when I first saw it. I never saw this in the theater.
I'm still going with the thing that it wasn't completely a Disney movie. It was just more of an afterthought to Disney, which is kind of sad considering how good.
The one big thing that I do give them kudos on, though, is the ship design and the interiors.
Mm-hmm.
I still think if they use that same ship and that same interior today, sans maybe the lens on the robot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know about that.
You know, but I'm just saying. You know, that it would probably hold up using that same set.
Oh, completely.
You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Just it could seamlessly fit into a movie that was produced today. Put it in the year put it in the 2011, you know, not have the 80s hair and the outfits.
The practical effects on it, one thing that you could do for evolving this ship would be instead of having him on an arm, he would actually just be a floating orb.
Could be.
That would float around. So
I didn't mind it on the aperture, though.
Yeah, neither did I. I mean, but that would be kind of like an evolution, you know. You start off, he's just on this wall. Well, then you can give him more freedom so he can roam around and everything just without being connected to that arm. The practical effects on that ship were amazing and looks cool. Good. Like when they go into the level one maneuver or whatever they call it, class one maneuver, those engines or whatever they were come up, they look so good. I think it really had something to do with all that chrome.
Yeah. Yeah, and when the seat came out of the ground and things like that. I mean, I thought that all looked really, really good and could stand the test of time. If you had just put a kid in there with like that looked like he was from today, mm-hmm. it could have still, you know, rolled with that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I thought that was neat. You don't often see that. You don't often see that. You know, like it mm-hmm. looks too dated or it looks like Star Trek would today, you know, if you put it, but this is the first one of these kind of movies where I think I just kind of went like, okay, I could totally see that be a set piece of today's movie and nobody would even know the difference.
More proof that this movie holds up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, there was a couple of things that looked kind of plasticky, like when he's shifting around in the chair and then he puts those like things come out of the side to make it so he's not flopping around and everything. Those look kind of plasticky, but I think overall it was easily everything that looked too plasticky or cheesy or anything on that ship was completely forgivable just because of just that general shiny look on it. And and seeing they've done a couple. They did a couple of things that were really cool with whenever he's like programming something on the ship, he's looking at the wall and there's lights that show up on the wall.
Yeah.
And then he looks away and those lights don't change.
They stay there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it, just the way they did that to make it look like a highly advanced civilization created the ship or what have you was just amazing and wonderful. And it completely holds up. I can't really say anything bad about the movie. The movie was only an hour and a half. And you know what? I don't think it needed more than that. it's being a short film, but this is one of those where it proves that you can tell a complete story within in 90 minutes and it's good. Other movies which tell a story in 90 minutes don't necessarily do it depending on what the story is. Like I think some of the X-Men movies were just way too fast. They should have been two and a half hours. While they ended up crunching it down into an hour and a half. And a lot of people say that, or a lot of the theory is that an hour and a half like the sweet spot. I don't think so. It really depends on the story. And this is one where that hour and a half does really work for it.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I wonder is if we did remake it today, would they even have that, you know, the aperture head kind of thing, or if they would just do some kind of the doctor from
the hologram or something?
Yeah, like a holographic kind of person. I would wonder if that would be the going
interest. Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, not like a Pee Wee Herman. look like a clown.
I would think more along the orb route where they basically take that head off the arm and just have it floating around.
Gotcha.
That's what I would see, especially if they did a remake and trying to modernize everything. I think that's the way of doing it. Because you also have to realize this is from a different civilization. Different civilization's not necessarily going to have a humanoid look to it. Or they may think that we don't need that. All we need is this thing with two little appendages that it can use to hold things in front of it. But that's about it. So.
True.
Yeah.
Good, okay.
Mm-hmm. All right.
What did we learn?
All right. So here's what we learned. We've learned that stripes and knee highs gotta love the 70s. In the 70s, it's perfectly acceptable for kids to play with fireworks. Well, they did have adult supervision.
Yeah, and 80s.
And 80s. And Jeff wasn't a kid at that time he was playing with fireworks.
He was 16.
So, yeah, well, he was old enough.
to be on the roof shooting fireworks off. Yep.
Yeah. it's also perfectly okay to let your kid wander alone through the woods in the dark. I didn't get that.
The younger one.
Yeah. It's yeah, okay. Just come home later.
Like, hey, go over to your friend's house and come back. Yeah, sure. You're going to be walking through this long series of woods, cross some train tracks. Sure. Yeah. Wouldn't it just be like down the streets? You would follow the street and anyways.
He can't walk a half a mile by himself. Gosh, Mom. I was like, what?
And it looked like he was going out longer than anyways. Yeah. Sometimes those voices in your head are real. That is what we learned from Flight of the Navigator. This is a definite must for any collection. I think more people need to be shopping for this so that Disney goes, hey, people like this. We should probably do something more with it. I really think that it holds up over time. That's just me.
Yeah, I mean, other than the actual time period that dates it, which would be the 80s.
Right.
It's a classic for me. Looking at it now, I think some of the acting was a little rough around the edges, but I still love it. I forgive it for that. It's a fun movie, so check it out.
And as I mentioned already, it's the first time I remember seeing it all the way through. I definitely enjoyed it, although I personally could have done without the Pee-wee Herman laughs.
Ah.
It's just a mean thing. It's a mean thing, being picky. But otherwise, I liked it.
Excellent. Now we're moving on into the present.
Right here, right now. There is no other place I want to be.
Compliance.
Anyways, in the present, we went to see a nice little movie animation, Romeo and Juliet, directed by Kelly Ashbery, starring James McAvoy, Emily Blunt, Ashley Jensen, Michael Caine, Jason Statham, and Ozzy Osbourne.
there was a lot.
Who was Ozzy Osbourne? I didn't catch
it. He was the fawn.
He was the fawn, the deer.
Oh, didn't realize that.
Wow. Yeah, that was, you picked him out right away.
I don't really like Ozzy, so I suppose I wouldn't have noticed. So basically, kind of a retelling of Romeo and Juliet with garden gnomes. Basically, one house next to another, one is green, one is blue, and they hate each other because one is green, one is blue.
Red and blue.
Right. So
say, are you colorblind, Jeff?
I don't know. I have no idea what I'm saying. But in any case, modern day retelling of the story. So what do you guys think?
The biggest surprise to me, I don't know how I missed this, because it became, and somebody already put this in the talking points here, but I had no idea that Mr. Elton John was so involved in this movie.
Me either. I had no earthly idea until the very first scene, and I was listening to the background music going like, that's Crocodile Rock.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I'm like, hold on a minute. That's Rocket Man, as soon as he took off. You know, and I was just like, what the heck is going on? And then I IMDb'd it. You know, at the theater.
Oh, okay.
I turned my brightness all the way down. And then I looked and I was like, executive producer Elton John. Aha! You know, and I was like,
there we go. We have found it.
Right. And then when they played the Elton John Lady Gaga song, I picked that out right away. And I was like, that's Lady Gaga. This is really an Elton John movie. So I didn't realize I didn't realize it until, but I actually really enjoyed the theatrically played out music, in the background of his songs. I have to admit, you know, I thought they fit perfectly with the theme, you know, and the scenes that it was in. I was like, it's enjoyable and recognizable. So I kind of found myself bopping my head to it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Versus like some song that I don't know that's just a soundtrack song.
You know, I came out of this movie, I was walking to my car, I was thinking, first off, why was there an ambulance here? And second, I need to see if I can download Crocodile Rock from iTunes from my iPhone. And it just kind of got stuck in my head.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you why the ambulance might have been there. Because the Justin Bieber movie opened that same night. So, there's some 14-year-old girls probably fainted.
I saw this on Tuesday, so I was literally the only person in the theater at 9:45 at night. So, it was kind
of. I saw this on a Sunday, and I have to tell you guys, the funniest part was this was the best behaved children's audience I've ever been in. I went on Sunday after church, like that kind of crowd.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, good Lord. I didn't even think about it. I kind of got up and was like running around. I was like, oh, I'll go see this about 3:00 this afternoon. And I went in there like going, oh, my gosh. Although I did feel like the big creeper guy / you know, molester guy, because I was like the only single person and the only male by himself in the theater. So actually, I kept thinking, oh, my God, somebody's going to think I'm a big creeper. You know, because I'm sitting here by myself. But then I, you know, but no, once it came on, I saw a bunch of hands go up like they were trying to grab whatever's coming off the screen for a second. And then it got quiet and it totally mesmerized the children. So I was shocked. It's the best. I've never had that happen. Usually it's some kids like, you know, screaming, yelling at a kid movie, and it didn't happen.
So I'm guessing you saw it in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jeff.
I did. It was 3D. Cute. It was cute.
No, I saw it in 2D because the 3Ds weren't playing at the time that I wanted to go see it because I had to wait for my tax return before I could go see it because I didn't have any money before then. So.
Gotcha. I saw it in 2D too, and trust me, me and Chad stuck out like a sore thumb. Because we saw it Friday night, opening night. The theater was at, I went to a 30 screen theater to see this.
30 screens?
Yeah, wow. There's 30 screens. And because it was the only place I could find that had a 2D showing of it, because I really didn't want to see it in 3D. Mm-hmm. And the theater was just packed with teenage girls.
Oh, really?
Just crazy. I mean, they were everywhere. And then I was just like, then I'm like, oh, God, this. I'm like, the Justin Bieber movie's out, so I'm like, hopefully they're all for that. We did get kind of a mixed crowd in mind. There were a lot of kids. They were relatively well-behaved. There were a few shriekers in mind, the screamers, but nothing horrible. But, yeah, I really I guess I, for one, I was surprised by the Elton John thing, and I was surprised that this was as comedic as it was, although I guess I shouldn't have. Seeing that the director was the guy who directed Shrek 2, I think. So it had kind of some similar feels, especially with the music. Because, you know, Shrek 2, Shrek always kind of played around with music.
He also he also did, he was part of animation for Kung Fu Panda.
But I didn't expect it to be a super serious romance movie.
Well, no, I wasn't thinking it was going to be super serious. I mean, obviously we have lawn gnomes here. It's not going to be.
There's some suspension of belief going on.
I guess I was expecting more of the Romeo and Juliet portion of it. You know, like this was the Romeo and Juliet was more of kind of like a framework for the story to work together, but it wasn't like a. You know, of course, all right. I didn't want the lawn gnomes to die at the end. You know,
right.
So, but. I guess, you know, I guess I was just looking for a little maybe less comedy. So that kind of was a surprise to me. But I still enjoyed it.
But it was very intelligently written, too.
Oh, my God.
With the comedy, you know, like the certain things, you know, like when they were talking about their parents when they died, like, let your mother rest in pieces, you know, like, or, you know, or when your father cracked.
Right.
You know, or certain, you know, they're saying things like this. And you have to think about it, you know what I mean, for a second.
It's totally one of those things. Again, it's, you know, obviously people at face value, if they look at this movie, they're like, oh, it's a kid's movie because it's animated and it's about garden gnomes and it's all cute and happy and bright
and
colorful. But the amount, it was funny, the amount of references to other movies in this.
Oh, yeah.
And other things was just crazy. I was like,
the American Beauty reference was hilarious.
Awesome.
I'm like, what kid is going to know? You know, those are definitely in there for the adults because, you know, and of course, I've seen a lot more movies than Chad has. So I'm like, oh, yeah, that's from this. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's from that. And he's like, I've never seen that. So
I wish I could quit you.
Yeah. Okay, well, shut up.
Yeah, you're going to have to get Chad to see more movies.
He probably will. but, yeah, I mean, like the flamingos were dirty dancing when they had the scene with them. And there's also all the little Shakespearean nods. So you had Rosencrantz and Guildenstern on the moving truck. And, you know, the Capulet and Montagues were the name of the people who lived at the house, obviously, Romeo and Juliet. Yeah. The movie was set in Stratford-upon-Avon.
Wait a minute, hold on.
Where there is an actual
here we go.
The actual statue of Shakespeare is, which they had voiced by Mr. Patrick Stewart.
Mm-hmm. Which is perfect.
Yes.
I mean, he was a Shakespearean actor to begin with anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did Star Trek.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I would also say beyond those intelligent references too, it was so smartly done. I mean, this is the stuff that kids won't ever pick up on until they watch it again 10 years later or whatever. Mm-hmm. But just the little things like when they would go to kiss or things like that, you'd hear the little clink.
Yes.
You know, it's like clink or whenever they would touch hands or something like that, you'd hear the little ceramic tink.
Yeah. And just the way when somebody's like, when they're rubbing the face, you just hear this small, like, you know, the sound of two porcelain gnome running rubbing together exactly instead of just like, you know, no sound or anything. Just these little hints and details just made it so much better.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, they were, you know, some they were like hollow, you know, it was just so weird. Mm-hmm. I mean, just interesting, the textures, and you could tell like where they were worn and where they were, you know, they weren't all perfect. Perfectly colored and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And I thought it was hilarious when they were like getting ready for the date and they were repainting themselves, like they were putting on new clothes. Mm-hmm. I thought that was funny. You know, it was like stuff like that. It was just extremely intelligent. you know, and you just don't, they don't think about that. But I also love just the little things, like some of the random characters. And then, of course, who doesn't love a cameo of Dolly Parton? I mean, like, and she, you know, and I was like, are you kidding me right now? You know, she's like, because it came out of nowhere. She's like, do you understand the rules? Do you? And I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, where did that come from?
Yeah, there's a lot of people in this movie and a lot of nods to a lot of things. So, to me, it would almost say that I would be willing to go watch this again just to be able to kind of, you know, sit there and pick figure up out on whatever, all the stuff that I missed the first time through.
This is definitely a non-Pixar movie that finally hits a home run.
Yeah. What studio is it? Does anybody remember?
I can't remember, but maybe it was DreamWorks. But I mean, Pixar has had the domination, and I actually think this one makes them run for their money.
Mm.
You know, or gave them a run for their money. And besides that, did anybody else, like, I mean, not to be completely shameless, but...
I know exactly.
Oh my god, he was so fucking cute.
See. Okay,
little chin strap, and when he would smile, I was like, "Shut up!" Yeah, I'm in love with a gnome.
I mean, my tweet, right?
Like,
you did see my tweet, right? I actually did that, like right at the beginning of the movie.
Did you?
I posted to Twitter is Gnomeo is adorable.
Yeah. I was just sitting there going like, oh, he's so cute. And when it's like, I can't. And it was just that chin, he had the thinnest chin strap. He just had the little masculine, like, you know, like little walk. I was like, oh my gosh, well, I want him.
I will have to say, though, you know, Bad Boys represent. I was more for Tybalt than for Noah.
Okay. So. But understood. I mean, so. Jason Statham any day. I'm got you. That, you know.
I agree.
But Gnomeo had the. He had my heart.
Yeah. No, I think that was good. I kept seeing that on Facebook. People are like,
oh, really? God,
is it so wrong to think a gnome is cute?
No, did they really? Oh, gosh. I had no earthly idea. I thought maybe I was just a freak.
No, nope, you're not the only one. Okay. You're not the only one.
No, not by far. So, but yeah, it was really enjoyable.
Yeah, and yet critics gave it 50. There's 55% rotten. They're saying here on the on Rotten Tomatoes, and the audience gave it a 68.
That's all.
Yeah, I'm gonna give this a 5 on here.
Yeah,
save it.
I don't know. It was getting trounced, and I don't know if we can blame Bieber for that.
If
he pulled, maybe next weekend or the following weekends it'll pick up. I don't know, but I was rather shocked by that too, and I was reading some discussions online about it, and people were like, oh my god, yeah, they're like, it's because it, you know, Tangled was released, and that Tangled was much better in animation wise and voice acting wise, and I haven't seen Tangled, so I couldn't speak to that, but I didn't find any part of this movie unenjoyable.
I didn't either. I mean, and considering that we're all, I mean, I think of the three of us, all three of us are real fans of Pixar, know, and the work of Pixar. So no offense to any other studio, but, you know, I'm Toy Story, Cars, you know, through and through. So you got to really impress me. And, you know, usually I haven't been, you know, other studio work, not impressed. This is the first time I'm like, wow. You know, I mean. Yeah. I mean, was Megamind Pixar?
DreamWorks.
You know, I mean, I should say, you know, Megamind too, but even Megamind, I was more impressed by the background stuff and things like that, where, you know, the textures and the sounds, you know, the detail work in this one, I even thought was even almost better, if not, you know, equal, if not better, to Megamind.
Right.
So.
Yeah, this was totally, well, it was Disney, but not done by Pixar, obviously.
Yeah.
Rocket Pictures, Stars Animation, and Touchstone Pictures are the production company. So, yeah, good job, guys.
Yeah, I wonder though if some of this negativity, I wonder if some of the negative feedback on it is at all because it felt like a Elton John monopoly.
You know? Yeah, I guess if you're not an Elton John fan, that is definitely going to leave a little bit of a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah,
this movie is absolutely filled with Elton John.
Yeah. But like I said, if you don't pay attention or you don't know the songs,
mm-hmm.
it just sounds like background music, and it's good background music. But then if you're an Elton John fan, you pick up on it. You kind of
right. I mean, other than the giant Elton John number that's in the middle of it. But.
Right. Yeah. The Lady Gaga slat and John. Yeah. You're right about that.
So
maybe it's time to actually buy that soundtrack. Anyways. So what have we learned from this, from Romeo and Juliet? We have learned doomed love is the best kind. Should have done that in more of a Patrick Stewart. Everybody needs a mankini lawn gnome. That was very disturbing. Who doesn't love a Dolly Parton cameo? Very true.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's wrong to think a gnome is hot, then I don't want to be right. Very cute movie. Gnomeo was adorable. I really liked it.
Yeah, it's a new perspective on a very, very old tale. But it's cute. It's enjoyable. Especially if you like Elton John, you're going to love it. So check it out. Take your kids, your daughter, whoever, your wife, your boyfriend.
Exactly. Super enjoyable. I'll just say it. Gnomeo was hot. Love the chin strap. Boop.
Favorite characters?
Good question.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's a tough one.
I almost want to say the Call Me Girl.
Oh. To me, it's the flamingo. Featherstone. I loved the flamingo.
Yes. Jim Cummings did the voice for him.
Yes, yes, yes. I did like the frog. Because I thought she was just out there.
You know, I really liked her. She was very appropriate for the character, for playing the nurse. But I thought she was kind of annoying.
Yeah, there was some annoying there, too. But I loved how the detail, again, on her, like, how she still had the hose in her mouth anytime she was trying to talk. You know, and it would get in her way sometimes, or, you know, certain things. I just thought that was, again, super detailed and interesting. So gotta go there. I'll go there.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually have to say Gnomeo.
But that too, yeah. If I had to pick anybody but Gnomeo or something.
And not because Gnomeo is adorable. I mean, that's a side effect. I like him more of, I like his character in general. You know, the confident guy, but not overly confident, etc. So it's he's the right guy. Anyways.
I did love Juliet Ninja, though.
That was awesome. In any case, shall we move on? Let's move on into the future.
It's gonna be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away. It's gonna be the future soon.
Compliance.
And in the future, we are watching the trailer for The Adjustment Bureau, starring Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, speaking of Emily Blunt, and Anthony Mackie, based off a story loosely based off of the Philip K. Dick short story Adjustment Team, featuring smooth-talking congressman whose political future is thrown into doubt and uncontrollable events and the arrival of a mysterious woman in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And takes place in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. And in this movie specific case, if you haven't seen the trailer already, the 5,000 movies that we've seen it in front of so far, it's about an affair between a politician and a ballerina. And then once they meet, they weren't supposed to meet again. And this group called the Adjustment Bureau shows up to try to make it right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then it all ensues from there. You know, so yeah, and I mean, I think there's a whole lot that we could say about this. I think it's poor timing, to be honest with you, for this movie. I think it's my personal opinion on it is that you're just looking at some of the images in the trailer and stuff like that, it was done better in Inception.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Some of those things. Mm-hmm. And like the freeze frames and things going on while people are frozen and that kind of stuff. And I'm just like, that too. Well, that too. Yeah. I mean, Dark City, Inception, I think we've seen all of this.
Well, here's the thing. It's in our notes here for Talking Points. It says, didn't we get enough of this? When it was called Dark City, and then it also said looks like some ripoffs of Inception. I have to say something about that. No, Inception ripped off Dark City. Dark City all the way for fair everything. now some of the reasons for that, those things that happened in Inception, which looked like from Dark City, made perfectly sense. It belonged in the movie just fine and fit very well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, they weren't ripoffs of Inception. Everything's was a ripoff from Dark City.
Mm-hmm.
Inception
may have done it better, but it was a ripoff of the
Dark City. And I love Dark City.
Well, you know, like I said, for people who haven't seen Dark City, to boil it down to its simplest aspect, because it's a very complicated movie,
mm-hmm.
You've got a group of people called strangers that are able to basically put everybody in this city to sleep and then alter things about their lives before they wake up again. So they're like, oh, this person's not married to this person anymore. They're married to this person. And, you know, these people are rich, but when we put them to sleep and wake them up, they're going to be poor. And they just make all these changes and adjustments to all these people, trying to sort of tailor things to a certain outcome, mm-hmm. trying to figure something out. So at its simplest form, it's like the exact same sort of thing. You've got, mm-hmm. you know, this team of people that are trying to adjust things to make sure they come out the way they're quote unquote supposed to
happen. Right.
You know,
without free, no one has free will,
mm-hmm.
kind of blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So the first time I saw this trailer many, 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 many months ago, that was the first thing that came to mind was, oh, my God, it's Dark City all over again. And I have to watch that again because I haven't seen it in forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Netflix has a director's cut, too. Maybe we should actually watch that for one of our present movies and watch the director's cut version.
And see what it's just like. Yeah, I think it's just ultimately, does this movie grab me is what I just worry about. Like, sure, Emily Blunt's in it, well-known actress, it's going to be well acted on her part. Matt Damon's in it, it's going to be well acted, he's a good actor, but it doesn't draw me in. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just seeing the concepts and things like that, it's definitely one that I'm like, DVD.
Right. There's nothing on the surface of the trailer that goes, ooh, I have to see this.
Yeah,
you know, because really, like you said, you've got all these great actors in it, so I'm not worried about acting either. Yeah. It's really going to come down to the writing of the movie and the story. So mm-hmm. if it's not pushing anything original right now, I don't have any real interest to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just feel like they're trying to drum up people to go see it because they're banking on. I think we've been watching the trailer for a billion years because, you know, we had to watch it for True Grit time when Matt Damon was coming out on that. They wanted to definitely remind people, Matt Damon's got another movie coming out soon. He's got another movie coming out soon. You know,
I think you liked him in True Grit.
Yeah.
Check him out in the Adjustment Bureau.
Yeah, exactly. And then Emily Blunt, of course, is in a couple things right now. So it's sort of like it's good timing to throw the trailer out there. It's just that I think we've been oversaturated by this trailer.
Right.
And it's kind of going, ugh, not again. But when you really boil it down, I think it's the truth is what we've said. You know, it's just like, what's the original spin on this concept? Right. And why should I go see this when I have a couple other movies that I like better for the most part at right now, and I could wait for this to come out on DVD? Why would I spend the $10 to go see it in the theater?
Right. Agreed.
Agreed. All I gotta say is I do find it kind of interesting, but it's like low on my priority list.
Yeah.
I'd like to kind of see it, but so it's like, if I get a chance, I'll go see it maybe, but it'll probably pass by and I won't see it until it gets on DVD.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one that I'll look at the Rotten Tomatoes reviews. I'll see how it did in the first week. I'll read information on it. If somebody's like, ooh, I didn't expect this to happen, I might get interested in it.
Right.
You know, but I'm not going to run anywhere for it.
Yeah, it's not covering any new ground, at least from what the trailer is showing us. So unless they're doing a really good job of keeping all the original things out of the trailer, which is kind of weird, I'm not really that interested. So the only way I would see myself going to see this movie is if one of us puts it on the list.
Chances that one of us is going to put it onto the list? Pretty no.
Agreed.
That is it. Yeah, we probably should do some more flick chart sometime. I was just thinking about that. We might do that for another intermission eventually here. So do check out flickchart.com/COL/movies and check out what our list has been generating, and hope to do that again soon here as well. As for next week, the coming attractions are going to be Blade Runner, the theatrical edition, although I have like five different versions, Unknown, and Source Code. So there's plenty of ways of contacting us. Tell us what you thought about Flight of the Navigator, Romeo and Juliet, and the trailer for the Adjustment Bureau. You can do that plenty of ways. Shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. Visit the website, comment on the blog at movies.cubsoutloud.com. Give us a call, leave us a voicemail at 361-COL-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies, which is essentially pulling everything from Facebook at facebook.com/COLmovies. Also, please visit iTunes and leave us a review. We might even read it on the show. I would love to get more of those. And that's it for this week's COL Movies. All I do have to say that this was very
compliant.
So with that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven, take care.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, dude.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.